Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's a good day if you like to cook, if you like to hunt. Two things go hand in hand because a couple of quotes here is one of the leading authorities on wild game cooking, Scott Latheth, can make virtually anything wearing fur, feathers, or fins come deliciously alive. That's the Denver Post. And right down the street in Charleston, South Carolina, the Post and Courier says he's practically a crusader when it comes to teaching fellow hunters and fishermen how to make tasty use of what they catch. Scott, thanks for taking the time out of your day to be with us on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Always good to be in South Carolina, anywhere. That's kind of a second home for me. We had a place there for a long time.
I know you did. And are you coming back anytime soon? I know you're busy.
I'm going to be in the area in February. I'll be doing some stuff with South Carolina Waterfowl, and I may be at the Southeast Wildlife Expo in Charleston. We're still working out a few details.
Oh, wow. That would be that's a great place to be. I'm there every year, and those folks do a great job with that event.
Well, they do the Sportsman's Ball.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly what night that is, and I used to do that with them with the Charleston Gourmet Catering, and
okay.
It's been a while, but I think I'm going to be in the neighborhood, and I think I'll be able to help out and cook a few things.
Well, that'd be good. I look forward to seeing you there then.
All right.
That's one place I'm always going to. Well, today, venison. Deer season is wide open here, and I want to talk about cooking and processing and game care and all, but I want to take just a second and have you introduce yourself to the listeners. You have a long history in the outdoors, and then with the cooking, the chef, and the books, and the TV shows, just take a second and tell everybody who you are.
Well, I've got a show on Sportsman Channel called The Sporting Chef, and I've been on Sportsman Channel since they started many years ago. I've spent a lot of time in South Carolina with their Camp Woody, the South Carolina Waterfowl Association, and the reason why I have such a long history is because I'm an old guy. I've been doing this for a long time. I had a restaurant back in the 80s where we served fish and game, and people would bring their game into us.
Oh, wow.
And we'd show them what it's supposed to taste like. It's really, really, my whole goal is to simplify it. I'm not trying to out-chef anybody.
Okay.
I don't try and find ingredients that you can't find. My whole goal is to make you appreciate the fish and game that you drag home more than you might possibly do now.
All right, I got to ask you, what's the most bizarre thing you've ever served?
Well, I've got another show called Dead Meat on Sportsman Channel, which we're hoping to revive here. It's owned by Sportsman Channel. And,
okay.
Armadillo was a little odd. It's the only animal that can transmit leprosy to humans.
Oh, wow.
And if you cook it all the way through, you can avoid all that. And if you do happen to get leprosy, you can cure it with antibiotics. But really, there's so many other things to eat. Why would you want to eat an armadillo just to say you did, right?
But
python was horrible. We did python in the Everglades.
Okay.
Just not edible, high in mercury. The worst thing, we were out in the Mexican-Texas border, and
right.
This guy served me a machito, which is goat heart, liver, and lungs, wrapped with goat intestines and tied with goat fat, and it was a bit undercooked, and I would highly recommend against it. How's that? Hey,
good,
you asked.
Good answer. better you than me. How's that?
I just had to eat a bite. It was all for TV, you know?
Okay. Well, you mentioned the armadillo. I think there's a picture of you out there with you and the armadillo on a serving tray.
There is.
Yeah.
And we did eat that one, but I didn't eat the whole thing.
Okay. Well, venison. Deer season's here. A lot of people are out. I've been out. I actually took my daughter this weekend. Didn't connect, but she had a chance. And, I have to hand it to her. It was a doe with a couple of yearlings, and she passed it up. She goes, I just not going to do that. So we're 0 for 4 or 5 hunts now, but you got a long season to go through. But I want to, you've got a long history in the outdoors, hunting, fishing, you cook what you kill like most people that hunt do. And some of these questions are kind of, when I looked at him, I was like, gosh, I don't really know if he can answer those or if he's got an opinion, but you said you liked him. So here we go. Processing.
Yep.
It used to be, it was all the old freezer paper and you froze it. Now I know a lot of processors are spending upwards of $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 to get shrink wrap machines. Any one better than the other, in your opinion?
Shrink wrap machine by far.
Okay.
Whether it's a food saver deal that you happen to have at home, or if the processor has the commercial one that you can put wet food in, it's better.
Okay.
If you've got a properly sealed, vacuum packed hunk of deer meat, it's not going to get freezer burn. Whereas,
right.
How many times have you opened up a paper wrapped one and you go, man, you've got to cut off part of it. It gets freezer burn. Really, the only way that I know to avoid it is by properly vacuum packing it. A lot of people have a problem because let's say they've got a moist piece of deer meat that
right.
maybe they haven't bled as well as they had. They
okay.
should have, or aged it as long as they should have. So you're putting paper towels in there to kind of keep the, you're looking at it going, man, I hope this seals before the juice runs into the chamber
right.
and makes it not seal, right? We've all seen that.
Right.
Take your deer steaks and freeze them first. Once they're just frozen, then vacuum pack them, and you're never going to have that problem with juice running out, and you can do it at home.
You brought up a question of aging. I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, when I was first starting out deer hunting, when the deer were finally huntable here in South Carolina where I hunted, we always used to let them hang for a week. That was, the processor, actually the check station had it, and you paid them a per day rate for, 7 or 8 days to hang it. Then you took it to a processor. Is aging, is it important when it comes to venison?
It is, especially with an older animal. With a younger animal, not nearly as much. And once you break it down, if you've got big roasts, if you've got large hunks, if you just take that and put it into your refrigerator on a rack with a drip pan underneath and leave it in there for a couple of weeks. Now, you're going to think, man, it's going to get discolored. Don't wrap it. Don't cover it. What you're going to do is you're evaporating a lot of that capillary blood, a lot of the blood that you're not getting out by hanging it.
Okay.
And it's going to make it an infinitely more tender, especially if it's a bigger chunk, a tender roast.
Right.
You can do it with steaks. Leave your steak out there for a week or so. You've heard about 28-day dry-aged meat.
Okay.
The problem is it loses a lot of weight. But the weight that it loses is actually just it's waste blood, and it's stuff that you don't want to eat anyway.
Okay.
And it's going to be a lot more tender if you age it properly.
Wow. And that's the thing. Now you take it to a processor, and in 3 days he's calling you back saying it's ready to come pick it up.
Yeah, and it's not ready to come pick up.
Okay. Speaking of processors, there's a ton of them out there around South Carolina, around the nation. Is there anything you'd suggest for hunters to consider when they choose a processor?
The meat has to be properly trimmed. If you get deer steaks back that some guy's put on a bandsaw and has not separated each of the muscles, that's not going to do you any good. If he also says, I'll give you the loins, I'll save you the back straps and the tenderloins,
okay,
and then I'm going to grind everything else into burger and sausage, that's not doing me a favor either. If he'll take the hind quarter and remove each muscle, and you can go online, there's several examples of what a properly trimmed hunk of deer meat, whether it's a top round or a bottom round or a sirloin, it shouldn't have any white on it. It should just be muscle. And you're going to lose some meat out of it, but you've got that silver skin on there that doesn't taste good, smell
right.
good, your body doesn't process it, get rid of it. And if they won't do that, and they're going to give you a cheap deal just to break it down, take it home and take a little time with a good sharp fillet knife and remove each muscle and get rid of all the junk that's not muscle.
So how easy is it to self-process a deer?
It's no big deal. I mean, as long as you've got a garage where you can hang it up, you break it down, and then you take each of the separate parts and you just start working your knife. Typically with a shoulder or a neck
okay.
or shanks, I don't break them down. I cook them whole. That's something I'm gonna put into a smoker until it's almost like pulled pork.
Okay.
When it gets to a certain temperature, you wrap it in foil with some sauce and just let the heat do its job to break it down, or you can braise it with a couple of cans of beer in an oven, and eventually you can take that bone-in deer shoulder, and it'll fall apart. You just grab the bone, and the meat just falls right off, and that stuff I'm going to use for tacos and chili and sauces and things like that.
And what about the people who argue that that's going to dry the meat out too much, smoking it?
Well, it's not going to dry it out if you go low temp. And once you get it to, if you get a bone-in deer shoulder and you get it to about 185 degrees, wrap it in foil. And before you do that, put some barbecue sauce or beer or whatever. You're going to need some moisture in there.
Okay.
And that way it's going to be wrapped in heavy-duty foil.
Okay.
Don't buy standard foil. That should be illegal. Wrap it in heavy-duty foil and then leave it in there for a couple hours, and it's going to completely fall apart. If you braise it, if you brown it, put it into a roasting pan with some celery, carrots, onions, some either wine or beer, cover it up with foil, and leave it in there for 8-9 hours at about 250 to 300 degrees.
Yeah.
It's not going to dry out because you've got moist
right.
heat in there, and that meat's just going to fall right apart.
All right, this one. What are some of your sleeper cuts for venison? Some of the underused or underrated that most people just look at the list and go, I don't want that.
How about shanks, man? Do you eat the shanks? Do you save those? They're so good. You take that bottom leg portion, just like ossobuco. I mean, we eat veal shanks,
okay.
and you know, so why not a deer shank? A lot of people will cut them up into little rings and use them as dog treats. If you take those deer shanks and you brown them, and then you braise them, like I was talking about with those shoulders, you have to tie a string around them.
Okay.
Because, and I'm doing like 4-inch long sections, tie a string around them because once they're done, they completely fall off the bone. They're so tender.
Wow.
So you brown it, put it into a roasting pan. I'm going to go with some tomato, fresh herb, red wine, a little balsamic vinegar, and that juice that you put in there is going to be nice and syrupy by the time you're done. And you're going to have this completely fall-off-the-bone deer shank that's great flavor. Put that on a big pile of mashed potatoes, and you're good to go.
And where does that come from, the shank?
The bottom leg, the leg section. So if you look below the knee on both the hind and front legs.
Right.
And you're going to go down until it's, you know, you get to the point
sure.
where it's just bone.
Right.
So right where the meat hits the bone and the bottom portion, and then up to the knee, all of that you can cut into sections and braise it, and it's going to be incredibly good. If you get to the point and you're going, man, this just isn't tender, you haven't cooked it long enough.
Okay.
If you cook it with moist heat covered low temperature, it's going to take several hours, but eventually it's going to completely fall apart, and it's incredibly delicious.
Oh, if I only had enough time. Oh, me. Well, what are some of the common mistakes people make when they cook venison?
Number one, by far, is to overcook it. You know, I'll ask people, how do you cook your deer? And they go, well, we cook it all the way through.
Okay.
So if you cook it all the way through until it's gray in the center, what you're going to have, because it is so very lean, and I mean, it's 10 times leaner than beef. There's
right.
just no fat running through these things. So it's not very forgiving. You're going to get a mutton-y, livery deer steak. What I find with a lot of people that say, I don't like deer, is somebody served them a rubbery old deer steak that wasn't properly handled. If you take even some of the hindquarter steaks that are just fine, but let's give it a good chance, and we'll use a backstrap.
Okay.
Cut that into steaks. If you cut it in half and you cook half of it medium rare and the other half all the way through or medium well done, it's two completely different pieces of meat. So if you grew up eating well done steaks and you just can't help yourself, then you're stuck with stews and chilies and soups and
okay.
those kinds of things.
Okay.
Unless you really like a tough rubbery deer steak, which I don't. So take 15 seconds out of your life and try a less cooked deer steak. I promise nothing bad is going to happen. You know, the other thing is people don't trim their deer steaks. If you've, like I talked about, that cross section of a deer where you've got all the different parts of the hindquarter, for instance, with a bone in the center of it.
Okay.
But a deer steak shouldn't have bone in it.
Right.
And it shouldn't have anything white on it. It should be trimmed properly and use the proper cooking method for different parts of your deer. The shanks, you go low and slow. Shoulder roast, neck roast. Take your time. You can't do it quickly. The better parts, the better hindquarter muscles, the loins and the tenderloins, cook it fast and hot and not overcooked.
The veritable venison burger. Everybody gets it. You know, you can get it plain. You can get it added beef fat. You can add bacon to it with some processors. Is there anything magic about adding fat or bacon to it that you can't do just with straight venison burger?
Well, you know, the straight venison burger is good if it's, and I like to do a coarse ground, not a fine grind.
And why?
Because when it's fine grinded, it's like when you make venison chili with a fine ground venison, it ends up with little BB sized venison in there.
Okay.
I like it to be a little more. I like it a little chunkier.
Okay.
And I add about 20% of either ground pork or ground fat. When I'm grinding it myself, I'll throw in some pork shoulder.
Okay.
I'll use chorizo, which is a Mexican sausage, which gives it some really good flavor.
Okay.
And I like to mix it up. I'll take blue cheese, mix that in there. I'll take mushrooms, throw that in there. Peppers, grind it up if I'm making a burger so that it's got more flavor to it. And don't be afraid to season it, because venison doesn't come pre-seasoned.
Right.
And a lot of people just don't season it enough. Anything you can put into a beef burger to make it taste better, you can do with a venison burger. There are those people who just like plain ground burger, nothing in it. But, you know, the same people might also like it overcooked. I'm cooking my venison burger, and this is strictly my choice.
All right.
Mine's going to be medium rare.
Okay. And that goes back to no fat in it and coming up with a chewy hamburger?
Yeah. Well, it's going to, if you don't have any fat added to it, it's going to be chewier.
Okay.
You can cook a deer burger with no fat added to it, and you can cook it medium rare and it's going to be fine. But I like to add some flavor to it. There are people who it's strictly a matter of personal choice that just don't like to go too far out when it comes to cooking anything.
Right.
You know, they're the meat and potatoes people.
Right.
That's their choice. You know what? It doesn't affect me what somebody else eats, but I like to add a little bit more flavor to mine. And if all I did was cook my deer the same way every time, then I wouldn't be able to have a cookbook or a TV show.
Understand that. And see, my wife is at home cringing because she likes it double ground. So, and I don't know why. I think it's more her palate than anything. I don't think,
right.
I mean, even we have chili out or something, she doesn't like big chunks of meat. I think that's just her.
Right. And
that's
her personal preference. That's hers. She, you know, what she does with her chili is fine. So.
That's right. That's trouble
I'm just
is.
Telling you how I do it. I don't want to make the wife mad.
Oh no, she's not going to get mad. In fact, she's probably home making a list of, hey, well, I might like to try this, or next one you get, maybe we'll try this, because normally what we do is we get the back straps whole and then the rest of it ground up, simply because I think it's, you know, she didn't grow up eating it. She started when we got married shortly after, you know, and really the only thing she could do was hide it in spaghetti and, you know, chili and that.
Right.
But at the same time, she appreciates that, you know, she didn't have to go to the grocery store and buy it. It's good for you. It's, you know, there's no chemicals in it or anything unless you, you know, get close to where the bullet went through. But, you know, it's, I think she really appreciates it. I think there's a lot of people out there that appreciate that fact. That it is.
Well, I have to lie to my wife every now and then about what it is we're eating, because she, believe it or not, she's not a big wild game aficionado. It's not her thing, and yet she's married to somebody who does that for a living. I do a venison cooking blog for Winchester every week.
Okay.
And I was doing last year I was doing venison bulgogi, which is a Korean marinated venison. And she came home from work and she said, what are you doing? I said, you know, I'm making a photo for Winchester, but it's not, it looks like venison, but it's really beef, but you know, it's a photo, so whatever. So she said, okay, well, she took the plate and went outside, and I got out to her when she had about one piece left, and I said, nah, that's venison. And so she stopped eating it. She wouldn't eat the last piece because she said, you lied to me. And I said, well, look, you wouldn't have eaten it if I hadn't lied to you. And you liked it, right? She goes, yeah. And there's still a lot of people out there that are just not going to eat venison, at least not willingly.
It's safe to say you can pretty much do with venison what you can do with beef.
Basically, the rule that applies is you just don't want to cook it as long if it's one of the primal cuts. Use a meat thermometer, go to 135 internal temperature on a steak. And yes, anything you can do with beef, you can do with venison. You just might have to add a little fat. You might have to tweak it a little bit for the cooking process, but you can turn your favorite beef recipe, you can change that into venison anytime.
What's your favorite cut, if you had to pick one?
Well, you know, it kind of changes. But I like most people, I'm partial to backstraps.
Okay.
But what I don't do is cut them into little medallions and butterfly them, which I find one of the most annoying practices out there for the processors.
Okay.
I don't know who decided that's a good idea. I'd rather get a whole backstrap, trim that silver skin on the outside, take a fillet knife and butterfly the whole thing, stuff it with some fresh herbs and mushrooms and maybe some blue cheese and tie the whole thing up, rub it with olive oil, salt, and pepper, cook it on a grill until it's just done and still a little bit purple in the center, let it rest, cut it into medallions, and put a little sauce on top of that. You know, that's a pretty good way to eat that.
And I know why you put the thought just left me. You're coated it with olive oil, right?
Olive oil, huh?
And I know why. Tell everybody why you coat it with olive oil before putting it on the grill.
Well, it's gonna help it brown on the outside. You rub it with olive oil. It adds a little fat to the outside, which will get it a little crispier. I like meat that's a little charred on the outside. It's gonna add a little bit of moisture, but really what it does do is it helps for browning on the outside. And you've heard people on TV say that if you brown it on the outside, it will seal in the juices. Well, that's not true, but it sure does sound good. When you brown it on the outside, it just tastes better. I like a good crusty deer on the outside. I like it black and blue.
Okay.
A hot cast iron skillet, slap a deer steak in there, get it crusty on the outside and still medium rare on the inside. To me, I like that. You get the texture, and then you get this not overcooked, delicious, moist piece of deer on the inside.
Going back to your whole backstrap stuff with whatever you stuffed it with, what would you serve with that?
You know, if I've got the grill going, I'm going to grill some vegetables that I've also tossed with olive oil and salt and pepper. Garlic, mashed potatoes, rice, whatever starch you got. It's a matter of personal preference, but I'm kind of partial to, you know, grilled in-season vegetables.
Okay.
You take some of the fall and winter squash that we have right now and make a little puree out of that with some acorn squash and set it right on top of that. That's pretty good, too.
Wow. Any last thoughts on venison?
No, man, just different parts of the deer, cook them differently. Don't be afraid to try it less cooked than what you're doing now. Nothing bad is going to happen. What you may end up with is a deer that you appreciate more, that's not tough and livery and gaming.
Oh, wow. Well, you got a second? I got one more question I'd love to ask you.
Sure.
You know, we're blessed in South Carolina. We've got saltwater coastline. Shrimp season opens up mid-September for recreational shrimping. The commercial shrimpers are going out there through November, mid-November, early December, and bringing in shrimp. And I've read a bunch of articles about, you know, the upside to, you know, locally caught wild shrimp and the downside to commercially raised imported shrimp. What are your thoughts on it? What do you think about the imported market?
You know, when you're buying shrimp, you want to always check the country of origin.
Okay.
If it's from Southeast Asia, there's a good chance that it was raised in questionable waters. There's no controls there.
Okay.
What does get inspected over here is such a minuscule amount. I always buy American from American shrimpers. You know, you guys in South Carolina have some of the best shrimp in the world. When I go with my South Carolina guys to duck hunt in Canada, one of the things that we bring to the farmers in Canada is South Carolina shrimp.
You would not believe the duck hunters I know who do that very thing.
Well, because they don't get it there. They're going to get, you know, the tiger shrimp and the other stuff that's raised in a septic tank in Vietnam somewhere.
Right.
And they're not getting, yours is briny, it's salty, it's fatty. I love it. Save those shells when you're doing that too, with those shrimp shells.
Uh-huh.
Put it with some celery, carrot, onion, a little bit of water into a pot, stock pot, and in about 30 to 45 minutes, you can make a delicious shrimp stock. You pour the whole thing through a colander. You can reduce that. Use that when you're sautéing fish. Use it when you're cooking other shrimp. Make the shrimp stock. But, yeah, really, American shrimp, what you all have is, I'm jealous because the Pacific Coast shrimp that we get here doesn't have nearly the flavor that y'all's does.
And why is that? The water temperature, salt salinity levels, what do you think?
I don't know, man. I could make something up, but I don't know what it is. The water is a lot colder on the Pacific Coast than it is on the Atlantic Coast. I don't know what it is, but any of the warmer water shrimp, you know, Gulf shrimp, what you all have there, it, to me, is the best. If I'm going to bring something home from South Carolina, it's likely to be shrimp, and it's going to be fresh.
You know, you mentioned shrimp stock, and one of the recipes that I cook in the fall a lot is seafood chipeño.
Uh-huh.
It's a San Francisco recipe, I think. It's kind of
supposed to be, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it originated from, you know, all the fishermen come through and they just toss in the pot whatever they had and they cook it right there on the shore. But I combined about three or four, and one of the ones that I came up with was exactly what you said. I use my shrimp peels to make shrimp stock to use as the base for the soup.
That's a great way to start that. And you can make fish stock too, but if you're long on shrimp, make the shrimp stock. That's going to give it another dimension and more depth of flavor when you do the chipino. And do you use blue crab and fish and whatever else you got in there? You know, it's meant, you kind of, the one that I eat today, we use Dungeness crab, which is a little bigger.
Right.
And you're going to have some big chunks of crab in the shell that are going to be sitting in there, and you get it's a job to eat it, but it's well worth it.
It's a job to cook it too. It's
a
4 hour process to do it, but yeah, I mix it up. I'll use some bay scallops and some mussels maybe, and then mahi is pretty much the fish I use, just because it soaks up and becomes whatever, you know, the whole flavor of the chipeño itself. But some claw meat out of some crabs, and it's a good fall winter recipe, boy. Mm.
And the what takes the time is the stock, to me, is the base. And you're not putting, I'm not putting the fish and all the crab and the scallops in there until right towards the very end.
Oh yeah, maybe 6 or 7 minutes left to go.
I'm making the stock. Yeah, I don't want to turn that in. I don't want to disintegrate my fish part.
All right. While I got you, and we got a minute, roasted peppers.
Yep.
What is it about roasting a red bell pepper that just makes it the flavor pop?
It's a whole different pepper, you know. If you don't want to bother putting it out on the grill outside, if you just take a pepper and you hold it with tongs over your open flame in the kitchen,
okay,
that works just fine. What you want to do is you want to get it black on the outside,
right?
Throw it into a paper bag. Close that paper bag and just let it steam in there for a little while. And then once, you know, if you leave it in there for about 10 or 15 minutes, then you scrape the black part of the skin off.
Right.
And it's so good. And I like to grill different colored peppers.
Okay.
Especially when they're in season, and serve that as a side dish. You can marinate them. You know, you can take a roasted red bell pepper or any kind of pepper, throw it into a blender with a little bit of heavy cream, salt, pepper, and a squeeze of lemon or lime juice, and just pulse that until it's really, really smooth. And use that as a sauce. It's great on shrimp, especially if you throw a jalapeno pepper in there, too, that you've roasted.
Right.
Give it a little bit of heat. It's great on chicken. It's great on fish. I'm a fan of the roasted peppers.
Oh, I am, too. I mean, I cook with them, but, boy, when you roast them, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Scott, I appreciate it so much. Please tell us, where can people find your TV show? Where can they find you? You got some cookbooks out there. You got blogs out there. You got the Sporting Chef email list. Tell us how people can get a hold of you and follow you.
Well, my weekly blog is whitetail.winchester. It's a venison cooking blog. I've got the Sporting Chef show is on Sportsman Channel Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. 12:30 p.m. on Sunday is kind of the prime airing.
Okay.
We've got people from all over the country that are contributing to it. I'm also the cooking editor for Ducks Unlimited magazine,
right.
So I'm in the DU magazine a lot. And if you go to sportingchef.com, there's a whole bunch of free recipes there that'll give you some ideas on what to do with your own fishing game.
Very good. Mouth is watered, so I guess that's a good segment on the radio. I appreciate you doing it. And look, if you are coming to Seawee, I'd love to meet up with you and at least – and I get to shake your hand. We've talked several times on the phone and always had a good time. But if you're going to be around Charleston, please let me know. I'd love to meet up with you.
We'll do it, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.